Chapter 64, Yasna, 14. Tal'n's disappearance didn't stop the influx of soldiers and recruits. Apparently, the momentum of the Herald rumors was too strong to be bothered by something so trivial as the actual Herald's absence. The army was a frighteningly diverse group. Many of its members showed surprising, even alarming faith in Tal'n's ability to defeat their pursuers. If these believers had been in charge, the army would have turned to follow its god, not to help, but to watch in wonder as their herald destroyed the infidels. Yasna listened to such sentiments with stupefaction. Most of those who spoke hadn't even heard of the army a few weeks before, yet they were already fanatically devoted to their god. Granted, most of them were Ilinra believers, and while Orthodox Vornism had given up on the myth of the returns long ago, Ilinra still taught men to watch for signs of the coming heralds. Yet Yasna couldn't help thinking that if these people's faith was truly as powerful and as loyal as they claimed, they wouldn't be willing to transfer it to Tal'n so flippantly. They were exactly the sort of chaotic element that made her uncomfortable with religion. Others in the army were far more skeptical. The mercenaries formed the keenest edge of this sentiment, and Vinda, Kemnar's lanky second, had difficulty keeping the zealots from turning on their more secular comrades. Even with Vinda's policing force, formed from some of the army's more stable elements, there were occasional brawls. Of course, some of that could be blamed on the overall tension in the army, for while there were a good number of both zealots and skeptics, the majority of the people were just frightened. This core group of people believed that Tal'n was a herald, while at the same time worrying that he wasn't. Yasna could see their tension. Many had joined the army less from design and more by happenstance. They had come by curiosity, whim, or desperation. There was no way to keep news of the army's pursuit quiet, not with Nachin and his family in camp. Rumors of the Vaden 10 squad ran through the camp, bringing with it an anxiety that wasn't dulled, even by the firm marching speed Meridas instituted. The rumors only grew worse when, several days out of Galavan, one of Meridas's young runners arrived at the camp with confirmation of the Vaden army's existence. According to the scout, the invaders had gained on Yasna's group. He admitted that there was no sign of Tal'n or Kemnar. They had their first desertions that night. It was a poor precedent, even if their recruits still far outnumbered the disappearances. However, it reminded the men of what they really were. Not a cohesive army, trained by a formal nation and in its employ, but a random band of pseudo-refugees held together tenuously, if at all. There would be no hunts for deserters, no executions of those who fled. They had come on their own, they could leave the same way. Morale was not improved by the marching conditions or by the need for rationing. Before leaving Galavan, Meridas had surprised Yasna by managing to arrange a nervous trading session with the city lords. His argument had been simple. He reminded them that every moment the city delayed them, even by trading, was a moment it could claim to have helped its Vaden conspirators. The strange reverse argument acquired the army much-needed supplies, though the session drained a good portion of their remaining chips. Even with the purchases, however, the food would not last long, and it was difficult to hide this fact from the men, since they were the ones carrying it. Yasna knew that the camp must assume that she had far more currency than she did, otherwise the desertions would have been much greater. However, if the Vaden army did approach, she had little doubt that most of these people would abandon her. They had come to fight for a herald, for food, and for pay. Soon, they would find themselves without any of the three.
"His name is Aniezer,"
and he calls himself the Lord of Rimac, Nachin explained. Everyone in the area knows about him, and a good number of the cities pay him a protection tribute. Protection from his own men, no doubt, Vinda spat. The long-limbed man sat looking at Kemnar's map, Brother Lon and the escaped soldiers standing with him. Yasna sat apart a short distance, listening quietly. True, Lord Vinda, Nachin agreed. Any city that refuses him is persuaded otherwise. However, Aniazer does make good on his contract. When raiders or bandits try to attack cities or caravans under his protection, he makes swift retribution. In a way, it's one of the safest areas in Rimac, or one of the most dangerous, since it's oppressed by the tyrant with the most men and the best equipment. And he controls the holy city? Vinda asked. The lanky man was trying very hard to carry Kemnar's position the same way he carried the man's blade, but neither was an easy task. Yasna had been forced to take upon herself some of the duties Kemnar had been doing, making certain food distribution happened in a timely manner, meeting out minor disciplinary actions, and other basic tasks. The aggregate was simply too overwhelming for a man such as Vinda, who was an honest soldier and a well-trained duelist, but who had never commanded anything larger than a squad of 10 men. Nachin, however, had proven a surprising resource. He quickly proved his word on being one of the best fighters in the area. His knowledge of tactics was sound, and he was remarkably honorable. Of all the men in Galavan, only he had come to her with the truth behind the city's betrayal. While several other soldiers had drifted out of the city, deciding to throw their lot in with the Herald, none had Nachin's skill or determination. He didn't look much like a soldier with his small, awkward build and twitching eyes, but he certainly acted like one. "Will this Aniazer trade with us?" Lan asked. The monk had, at Vinda's pleading, taken a more active hand in camp administration. Though he had little experience, Lan's position as a Vorin clergyman had gained him the respect and goodwill of the general soldiers. Vinda gained some measure of authority simply by being seen counseling with the monk. Nachin shrugged. Trade? No, I think Aniazer will be likely to consider us a threat. An armed force? Traveling through his territory? He'll think we've come to try and capture his Oath Gate. Oath Gate. It was easy to forget about the Joravan Gate. It was used rarely, and then only by merchants, willing to pay the exorbitant fees demanded by the despot who controlled the holy city. She supposed that was probably this Lord Aniazer. Oath Gate! Nachin exclaimed. That's right! Maybe we can... Doesn't work that way, Vinda said with a shake of his head. Both sides have to be open, and the one in Ral Aram is most certainly sealed. It's a hope, I suppose, but a flimsy one. Oh, Nachin said, let down. His eyes glanced toward Vinda's, Kemnar's, shard blade. To Nachin, born away from civilization in Rimac's wilds, a shard blade was probably a legendary thing, perhaps even thought mythological.
It just seems like a bad idea, Lord Vinda, Nachin said. No Oath Gate, no money to trade, and a city ruled by the most powerful despot in Rimac. Why even go to Joravan? Why not head for Alethkar?
Talanel told us to meet him in the Holy City, Yasna said, surprising the two with her entrance into the conversation. That, then, is where we shall go. Vinda blushed.
Yes, my lady, he said. Of course, we didn't mean to.
I know you didn't, Yasna said, turning away. Unfortunately, Nachin was right. She had heard other army members speak of Aniazer. All agreed that he was a ruthless man, especially with those who posed him a threat. Even though Yasna's men were poorly equipped and barely trained,
Their numbers were quickly approaching 1,000. Theirs was not an incursion that could be ignored. Of course, without Taln, they might as well disband the army anyway. With the Vadens approaching, her men wouldn't last long beyond his failure to return. Failure to return. It had been 6 days. He would have met the Vadens 5 days before, around the same time as Maridas's scouts. Whatever plan Taln had intended, he had likely executed it by now. Nachin and Vinda trailed away, their conversation stilled by her comment. Brother Lan remained where he was.
"It's probably too soon for him to be back," Lan said. "There is little sense in worrying about him, though I doubt you can help yourself."
Jasnah stifled a blush.
"What makes you think I was..."
Lan nodded to the south.
"You've been staring in the direction he went for the last hour. You do that a lot these days."
This time she did blush. She glanced away. "I'm just worried about the army," she said. "The rumors that he'll never return are growing stronger, and we had more desertions yesterday than we had new arrivals."
"Well, that's certainly something worth worrying about. I'm afraid we're making something of a mess of your army."
"You're doing fine, Brother Lan," she said. Lan raised an eyebrow.
"I made only a passable monk, my lady. I'm not sure what possessed me to think I might make a good general. It's Vinda's fault. I told him that I would be of no help, but he wouldn't listen. You see, I've spent my entire life striving to be as useless as possible."
"You say that as if you are proud of it," Jasnah said with a frown.
"You have to admit," Lan said. "It is something of an accomplishment. Few men can truthfully claim to be as vestigial as myself. The only problem with my success is somehow I've arrived in a position where there are tasks I actually wish to accomplish, and unfortunately I find myself woefully underqualified."
He sat uncomfortably for a moment before speaking again.
"It's breaking apart, my lady. Even I can tell that."
"I know," Jasnah said. "Taln was their heart, the reason they came."
"It's more than that," Lan said.
"Kemnar and Taln, they knew things, understood things. They could make certain all the jobs got done and that everyone wanted to do them. Vinda tries. In fact, I worry that he tries too hard. But he's no substitute for Kemnar. And Maridas doesn't care to even try to be a replacement for Taln."
"I shouldn't have sent Kemnar after him," Jasnah thought.
Not for the first time. She hadn't realized how vital the man had become to the army's running. Regardless of whether Maridas or Taln were in charge, the people had come to Kemnar to settle their disputes. His efficiency had made certain everyone had enough to eat, everyone knew where to sleep, and that guards were always posted. Maridas knew how to organize an army, but he obviously expected these little details to be covered by others. Though Taln had carried the people's hopes, Kemnar had carried their day-to-day functional respect.
"And all this time, I was using him as my personal messenger."
Kemnar's duties as her guard had been a little more important than that, of course, but she had always used his raw effectiveness for uninspired purposes. If his ability to organize this army was any indication, Kemnar could have become a senior general in the king's army, despite his low noble rank. She hadn't realized what she'd kept him from. He probably didn't either. Ambition seemed a foreign word to the man.
"And now they might both be dead."
The thought made her stomach twist. She had come to rely on them both so much. Kemnar for what he did, Taln for something else. She told herself it was his ability to unite the army, that she wanted so desperately for him to return, only because she had based her play for troops upon his growing reputation.
"He was so frustrating.
He rarely did what she told him, and despite his oath, he always found a way to wiggle out of her commands. Even worse, he was condescending. It wasn't intentional, of course, but it was there. Sometimes he acted as if she were simply a child, though he couldn't be more than 5 or 6 years her senior. More bothersome than his insubordination and his self-importance, however, was his determination to see the world he wanted to, rather than as it really was. She had always hated people who deluded themselves, whether they did so through religion or through unrealistic expectations. Taln, however, put such mild offenders to shame. Jasnah nodded to herself. He was a madman. It was better that he be gone, thereby leaving the army to understand their true situation. The ones who stayed, once they realized that Taln wasn't going to return, would be the strong ones, the ones she wanted anyway. Yes, it was certainly better that he had left. Left her. Alone. "Don't worry," Lan said. "He'll return."
"Don't be a fool, Lan," Jasnah snapped. "He went to die out there, to slow the Vedans down as much as possible and take as many of them with him as he could. He won't be returning. We both know that."
"Actually," Lan corrected with a pleasant voice, "I don't know that. And unless you've been hiding a talent for numerology, I doubt that you know it either. I've seen him do some amazing things. Perhaps he will return."
"Unlikely," Jasnah said.
Lan sat back with a thoughtful expression. "You know, people say you're paranoid," he said. "The citizens of Ral Aram talk about you a lot. The king's heretic distrusting sister. The woman with a heart as chill as a highland storm." Jasnah adopted a cold expression, not dignifying the insult with a comment. Lan continued as if he hadn't noticed her icy glare. "They're wrong about you. I know paranoia. Trust me, when such people come to the monastery, I'm the one who gets to take care of them. You, my lady, are not paranoid."
"I'm not," Jasnah said flatly.
"No," Lan said. "You're just a pessimist. Not the overt kind. The man who complains that his lot isn't as good as that of his neighbor, or who tells his friends their ideas are foolish. No, you're a true pessimist, a planning, thinking pessimist. You assume things will turn out for the worst, and so you prepare for them to do so. You distrust not because you logically determine that someone will betray you, but because you know that their betrayal is the worst possible outcome of the relationship. You find fault to prove to yourself that you are right. And, most importantly, you refuse to believe. For in belief, there is always the worry that you might be wrong. That's not a worry you can endure, for your mind is always nagging that if you might be wrong, you probably are." Jasnah opened her mouth, then found herself shockingly unable to respond. Something about the monk's solemn, friendly gaze made her want to squirm uncomfortably. Was this the same insulting, mocking man that had traveled with them for so long? How had he suddenly learned to be so observant?
"I realize you don't believe in the Almighty, Jasnah," Lan said. "And to be honest, there are times when I don't know that I believe in him either. Though those times usually come when I'm scrubbing yet another floor. The faith of religion is, perhaps, something that will never suit you. You could, however, try to believe in your friends."
Friends.
Ladies of the court didn't have friends. They had their allies, their enemies, and their husband. Jasnah looked up, containing her introspection, and instead studying the smiling monk.
Lan shrugged. "Instead of analyzing your personality, I could just make fun of you for a while, if you think it would make you feel more comfortable."
Jasnah snorted. "Go see if you can find a way to bother Meridas," she said,
waving her hand. The winds know he could use a little humility.
I shall do my best, Lan said valiantly, then wandered off in the direction of the rations cart.
Yasna sighed, pulling her cloak close and looking again to the south. At the speeds Nachin had given for the enemy army, the invaders would catch Yasna's group in another day, two at the most. They would soon know whether or not Tal'n's delaying tactics had been effective.